All right, so this is episode 3 of Judaism from the Ground Up. Rather than spend more time on social media, just looking at horror and people debating how horrible things are and whether their terror and horror is more horrible than other people, I thought I'd put more Torah out into the world, and hopefully that will help at least me. So here goes. So, episode 3 of Judaism from the Ground Up, entitled, It Is Not Good for Man to Be Alone. So, many people know that you are allowed to transgress any mitzvah, any commandment, to save a life. Okay, if somebody puts a gun to your head and says, eat this cheeseburger, or I'll blow your brains out, you eat the cheeseburger, right? Now, there are exceptions for, you know, a time of persecution, stuff like that. But we generally see the saving of lives as paramount in Judaism. However, there are 3 exceptions. Idolatry, sexual immorality, and murder. Okay? So, those are the big 3 mitzvot that you have to die rather than transgress. Somebody puts a gun to your head and says, you know, kill this guy or I'll kill you. You take the bullet. Okay? Now, what's interesting is how this is derived or learned or justified. Okay? So, the Gemara in Sanhedrin 74a discusses, you know, where do we derive that a halacha, the halacha that a murder is yehareg ve'al yavor, or, you know, kill rather than transgress. So, rotzeach gufa minalan, so murder, where do we derive this halacha, where do we derive this halacha? Svarahu, it's logical. So it tells a story of somebody came before Rabba, Vamar Le, and said to him, Amar li mari dore zil katle leplina, vilo katilna lach. Okay? So somebody comes to Rabba and says, the lord of my place, you know, local official, said to me, go kill this guy, or Plony, or, you know, whoever. So-and-so, and if not, I'll kill you, all right? The case that I've been talking about, but somebody puts a gun to your head and says, you know, kill this guy or be killed. So, Rabba says back to him, okay, let me find my place, Amar lach, liktulech velo tiktul. Go, he should kill you and you should not kill. Mi emar didama didach sumach tve, who says that your blood is redder than his? Dilma dama dehugavar sumach tve. Maybe his that guy's blood is redder than yours. So, this is actually really interesting because it's not what you would have expected. What you would have expected is, well, because, you know, you can't, you know, decide one life is more important than, you can't, you know, say, you know, all lives are equal, therefore we don't give up one. What this is saying is you do not know how valuable human life is. You do not know the value of a given human life. So and I view this as like a foundational concept of halacha, right? That the value that we give to other human beings, the value that we give to the other, right? We're going to use that phrase a lot. It's going to make me sound pretentious, but it works, right? So what gives that person, you know, in infinite value is not that we know that they are endowed with rights or whatever, or we know that, you know, all human beings are the same value. It's that you do not know, right? It's not who said your blood is redder. It's who said your blood is redder. Maybe their blood is redder, right? It's indeterminacy, right? There's, because you don't know the value of a given person, because you are not God, who knows all, you know, the plan of history and everything, right? God knows the value of a given person, right? But we don't know. Therefore, we have to treat all human beings as equal. Therefore, you cannot decide one life is more valuable than the other, right? So what this points to, I believe, is that the foundation of Jewish ethics is not, you know, the value of it, like we value all human beings equally, is that we do not know the value of human beings, right? There is something about the other that is inaccessible and indeterminate and unknowable. We do not understand their perspective. We do not understand where they are coming from. We do not know their place in the divine plan. We cannot access their perspective. And that's why you have to respect them, right? So what makes the other valuable is its inaccessibility, indeterminacy, and unknowability, right? To use the expressions that we've been using so far in this podcast, right? You have the order and the chaos, right? So it has, the other has to genuinely be able to disrupt your order, right? It has to be something that is inaccessible to you, right? And something that causes you, ruins your plans, right? So hopefully that makes sense. All right, so now we return to discussing Bereishis, okay? So once Adam is created, he is immediately confronted with the other in two forms, okay? We're going to talk about two forms of confrontation with the other. Yes, this is, there's a lot of confrontation from, by Rav Soloveitchik in this, but I'm going to go in some different directions. So first, the divine command, right? He's given limitations on his drive to create order and shape creation in his image. Right? You can eat from anything in the garden except for the tree of knowledge of good and evil. So this fits the Tzimtzum paradigm that we've talked about previously of expansion and then retraction. Right? You can eat from anything in the garden, expand, except the tree of knowledge of good and evil, contract. You can do anything you want except for this one thing. Right? But the message of this is that you know, we have a desire to impose our order on the universe, impose our vision of what the universe should look like, right? But we have to stop, right? Even Adam, even before the sin, right? Pre-sin Adam, right, has a limit put on him, right? You cannot do everything that you want, right? The divine command demands that we stop before we fill up the world. It demands that there be one part of creation that cannot be controlled, conquered, or subdued, that will remain there as a reminder that you are not the only thing that exists. The divine command demands that we stop in the face of the great other. We expand, and then we contract. God's order is Adam's chaos, and vice versa. God prevents Adam from enacting his order, and Adam, as we've talked about previously, provides an element of chaos in the order that God has created. We expand our order, we try to impose our order, but we contract in the face of God, just as God contracted his order to allow for our chaos. God expands and contracts, we expand and contract. But more importantly, the one tree Adam can't eat from is the tree of knowledge of good and evil, the ability to access God's perspective. This is one of the chidushim, one of the innovations of Judaism. So Yecheskel Kaufman, who good person to read on what makes Jewish monotheism different from, you know, polytheism beforehand. So he writes about how monotheism is more than just about how many gods you worship. It's not just a reduction in the amount of gods, but about where you think those gods come from and what rules they must obey. Other cultures believe that the gods are created beings emerging from what Kaufman calls a primordial womb, and what differentiates them from humans is not anything inherent to them. It's merely that they have powers. The line between humans and gods is not so clear-cut. Humans and gods intermingle and have children. Humans can become gods, and because they are of the same realm and made of the same stuff, they're only separated by their ability to wield power. And because of that, the gods can be overpowered by using the forces from which they emerged and are subject to. So this is what magic is, the use of ritual, incantations, or whatever, to override the natural forces, that the polytheistic gods represent, by tapping into powers that they themselves are subject to, or to use one source of power against another. Okay, so the polytheistic gods are, you know, representing the natural forces, but they emerge from this primordial womb. And if you could, you know, tap into the thing that they all emerged from, then you can control them, right? And the only reason why the gods control us is because they have powers, right? But in Judaism, God is not a created being. God does not have an origin story, right? He doesn't have this, you know, creation myth. God just is. At the beginning of the story, he just is, right? He cannot be overridden by magic, and the Torah strongly opposes magic, both in law and narrative. God is completely separate and unknowable, apart from the world, cannot be overpowered, and humans cannot become God's equal. And thus, the one line that God orders Adam to never cross is the one that would grant him the perspective of God and the power that comes along with it. Because God's perspective is fundamentally inaccessible and indeterminate, God's order is fundamentally unknowable, and trying to obtain it will only lead you to think that you've accessed it, which leads inexorably to violence and tyranny. Because if you lack that indeterminacy and doubt, if you lack that question, that nagging question of, my chazis, how do I know that their blood is that my blood is redder? Maybe their blood is redder. There's no room for chaos, only your order. It is the tyrants of the world that create order, who impose their own vision of order on the world, shutting themselves off from any chaos that might complicate those plans. How do you know your blood is redder? So the existence of an all-knowing God highlights how subjective any of our perspectives are, how rooted in a fundamentally skewed view of the universe each individual is, and how they can only be united in a God who has knowledge of good and evil. That inherent indeterminacy is the foundation of halacha. How do you know your blood is redder? Are you, like God, knowing good and evil? Maybe their blood is redder. Maybe you have attempted to impose your order into a realm that you have no access to. You do not know, thus you must value all lives and all perspectives as fundamentally equal. So what Adam is really being commanded is to resist the temptation to seize the post of God King, who tyrannically rules over his subjects by insisting that only his vision of order, with himself as the top priority, based only on the coercive power that he is capable of wielding. And that is the essence of all divine command, a reminder of your limitations as a human being. That is the first other. God is the great other. But Adam needs something more earthbound. He needs an other equal to him, to be chaos to his order on earth, to oppose him conquering the earth to install his order. The animals will not do. He is unable to communicate with them. That's what the pasuk says. He was unable to, okay, why not? There's a quote from Robert Anton Wilson, who I like, that seems obvious once you hear it and think about it. Communication can only happen between equals. Think about every time you were afraid to tell an authority figure what really happened or what was really on your mind. When someone holds coercive power over you, you cannot be honest with them, and you cannot really communicate with them. And Adam has been created B'Tselem Elohim in the image of God, and the animals have not. He cannot communicate with those that he can coerce. So God must create an equal for him. As it says, Lo tov heyot adam levado, es elo ezer kenegdo. It is not good for man to be alone. I will make for him a helper equal to him. Ezer kenegdo, a helper equal to him. That is, I believe, and based on Yehuda Herzl Henkin in his essay Equality Lost, the correct translation of kenegdo is equal, as in the phrase mida keneged mida. The recompense equal to what was done. Okay? Ezer kenegdo means a helper equal to him, right? Doesn't mean just a helpmate or a helpmate opposite him. It means equal. God creates for him an equal. Why? Well, first of all, as we talked about last episode, Adam can't do everything alone because he is an individual endowed with specific traits that can fill a specific niche, and other people need to exist to fill other niches. Thus, an other needs to be created. But more than that, this other needs to be equal to him because it's supposed to make Adam realize that his own perspective is limited, that it is possible for someone other than him to exist with a wholly different perspective than him, and just as he sees his own order as emerging from the specific traits he has been given, so too he should appreciate and respect other people's order as inherently valid, and allow them to bring chaos into his order, to complicate his world, to ruin his plans. Doing so would only be possible through communication, through a relationship in which the participants are in equilibrium, knowing when to assert themselves and their order, and when to yield in the face of someone's chaos. That is only possible when the participants are equal and exercise no coercive power over the other. Adam was supposed to recognize that the other was created in the same divine image he was, equal to him, providing a perspective just as valid as his that he should engage with no thought of coercion and dominance. Instead, he sees the other as created in his image. As he says when she is created, Zotapam, etze meyatza mai uvasar mibsari, lezos ikare isha kime ish lukhazos. The human said, this time she is it, bone from my bones, flesh from my flesh. She shall be called woman, isha, for from man, ish, she was taken. Bone from my bones, flesh from my flesh. I will call you isha, because you were taken from ish. Adam is given an equal and creates an inferior. Adam is given someone created in God's image, but he paints her in his own. Every relationship involves each party both asserting and contracting before the other. But Adam confuses her self-contraction with submission and does not contract himself in response, instead seeing her as part of his order, Isha from Ish, something to be dominated rather than someone to be in equilibrium with. Adam, by designating her Isha, because from Ish she was taken, I will argue, invents gender, creating a dominant type, himself, and a submissive type, her, based on biological sex and utility to him, instead of seeing her as a fellow human being. He could have seen the other on her own terms, instead of being in equilibrium with her based on her own unique individuality. He attempts to place all people into two categories, those that dominate and those that are dominated. The creation of gender thus creates hierarchy, and hierarchy, in turn, creates boundaries to communication. Communication is impossible between unequals, and the rest of the story is one with multiple failures to communicate. As Chazal point out, Adam fails to communicate the actual content of the divine command. He tells her, don't touch the tree, instead of don't eat from it, because all communication from up to down in the hierarchy fears telling the truth. Having created a hierarchy of gender, Adam appoints himself gatekeeper of divine knowledge. Not that the woman is necessarily blameless. The woman is tempted with power, to be like gods, knowing good and evil, to trade indeterminacy for an order dictated by her. She is presented with the temptation of being put on top of the hierarchy, rather than destroying the hierarchy itself, and she fails the test. Once hierarchy has been created, it is very difficult to think outside of it. Think about how many revolutions have failed because it merely replaced one hierarchy with another. But according to Chazal, the snake took advantage of the failure of Adam to communicate the divine command to her, pushing her against the tree to prove that Adam had been lying. So sure, the woman eats the fruit of the tree and falls for the snake's convincing. But she's in the position she's in because the hierarchy created by Adam put her there. But what's really interesting is what happens next. She gives some of the fruit to Adam. Why didn't she tell him? Well, given the theme that we've been working on here, it's because she's afraid to communicate that she messed up, because communication is impossible between unequals. Hierarchy is created, and communication becomes impossible. And when communication is impossible, sin is committed. That theme is continued in the punishments given to Adam, the woman, and the snake, which can all be put in terms of boundaries to communication and cooperation. I realize I was skipping some stuff here, but I want to make this a coherent piece, but you're all welcome to tie in other aspects of the story in, or to tell me I'm wrong about this completely. So, first one is the snake, in which human beings are alienated from nature when they become masters over it, and the relationship between human beings and animals becomes one of enmity. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Enmity. I will put enmity between you and the snake. Right? The woman is cursed with painful childbirth and the inability to express her tishuka, her urge or longing, for her husband, as a result, I will argue, of Vihu Yimshal Bach, and he shall rule over you. Because he rules over you, you will be unable to communicate with him. The man is cursed with agriculture, which further alienates human beings from nature, and now hard labor must be expended into feeding oneself by the sweat of one's brow, rather than the Edenic state of the hunter-gatherer who can eat from all the trees of the garden. There is a theme of pain and labor that must be expended in order to produce, be it agriculture or childbirth, almost as if nature itself will have trouble communicating with humanity. Dominance and hierarchy throw human beings out of equilibrium, with each other, with God, and with nature. But the original sin, I contend, was not eating from the tree. It was the creation of hierarchy that inexorably led to that sin being committed. And these curses are consequences of that act more than they are punishments. These things all happen as a result of the creation of hierarchy. And the first hierarchy, the one that leads to all the others, is man over woman. I have begun to see, and he shall rule over you, not necessarily only as a curse put on the first woman, but a curse on man as well. And here I'm only relating my own experiences. I cannot speak to women's experiences. That is part of what I'm saying here. But as a man, you will be put in a position of dominance, which will make you blind to others and deaf to their concerns, unable to truly communicate because you are so afraid of losing that dominance by showing any weakness whatsoever. Your heart will be hardened by your inability to communicate truthfully with others and your efforts to maintain a hierarchy that was forced upon you. Women will be unable to truly communicate with you because of the fear you perpetuate in order to maintain that hierarchy. Hierarchy is bad not just for those lower, it certainly is bad for those lower, but it is also bad for those on top. It warps your mind. It makes you less empathetic, less thoughtful, and more impulsive. Power has similar effects to brain damage. The implications for those of us in positions of privilege, no matter how tenuous, is something no one seems to want to consider. But curses can be overcome. No one sane is saying epidurals are forbidden because Bates have told you, in pain you shall bear children. Being a man, especially cis and white and, you know, all the other defaults, right, in today's era, is coming to terms with the fact that you were put on top of a hierarchy against your will, and you suffer as a result. And trying to maintain that hierarchy or strengthen it will only increase your problems. But you have the opportunity to fix that, to put others on equal ground to yourself, to seek out and listen to other perspectives, to let go of the desire for dominance and embrace the desire for true communication. To do this will require effort. Just as Adam is cursed with thistles and weeds to prevent him from being able to obtain food from the ground, it will require effort to get back to a pre-sin state of equilibrium. It is very difficult to let go of power. That is part of the damage it causes. What I am arguing, essentially, is that the second creation story is a confession. It is man saying, here's where hierarchy comes from. It is not natural or ordained by God from the beginning. In fact, they start out equal, both in the first creation story and in the idea of Ezer Konekdo. Hierarchy is the product of a sin produced by a lack of communication, which was, if you read carefully, man's fault. Hierarchy leads to a lack of communication, which leads to sin, which leads to furthering that hierarchy. The task of Judaism is to try and fix that. Thank you for listening to Judaism from the Ground Up, Episode 3. Hope you enjoyed, and hope you are not angry at my interpretations here. If you are, you can communicate that with me. I am more than happy to let the perspective of others be complicate the order that I have put into this piece. And until next time, hopefully this distracts you from the terrible state of the world today. And with that cheery ending, I'm going to stop recording.